time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
This is Lee Bockham. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you thrive and grow no matter what life throws your way. And today we start a new series. This series is about what thriving people do differently. How do thriving people stand out? What are the attributes of how people thrive more and more in their life? How do they build that into their life? You see, I have a belief that success leaves a trail. And if you follow that trail, you can find ways of bringing that into your own life. And so when we look at how people are thriving, when we look at the characteristics of thriving people, we begin to understand more how we can bring that into our lives. Now, I will say that as I talk about these, I'm not assuming that someone who's thriving is doing all of this, but there are pieces of the puzzle that you can begin to bring into your own life and thrive more. You see, thriving is not binary. It's not that you're either thriving or you're not. It's that you can always thrive more. No matter where you are, you can always take on more pieces of the thriving puzzle and learn how to thrive more. You're not either thriving or stagnant. You're somewhere in between. So you can decide to thrive more. You can step into that thriving place, regardless of what life is throwing your way. I believe that thriving is becoming your fullest, best self, engaged in the world, activated, and moving toward an engaged present and a greater future. We can always learn from the past, but part of what happens in our lives is we often get captured by the past. Instead of learning from it, we're caught in it. And so part of this task of learning to thrive is learning how to determine what you want to be and move towards that rather than being caught in what might have already happened, what's in the back. So what happens to you does not have to define who you are or who you become. This is about a struggle between your fears and your aspirations. And it's not that the fears are unimportant. In fact, fears are very important. They mark for us what's important. Sometimes we use fear as what we avoid. They're an avoidance detector, and I want you to think of them as an importance detector. It points to the importance of something. So as we talk about this, the aspirations are there, and the fears are ways of us determining how we move in that direction. So we want to start this series with how thriving people do things differently. Today, we want to start with the first attribute of that, and that is that thriving people recognize a thought for what it is. They recognize that a thought is a thought. For me, this concept is fundamental. I remember when this was pointed out to me, and here I am, having spent lots of years studying to be a therapist, learning how to help people deal with their thoughts, and it was never that clear to me, the idea that a thought is a thought. Let's think about that for a minute. A thought is just what our mind does, right? We have these minds that have great capacities, but all our mind is doing is creating thoughts. That's the purpose of that, to create these thoughts to help us even think through some things is thinking. When we talk about memories, that our mind is thinking about something, a memory of the past, remember that a memory is just a thought from another time brought into the present and rethought. So thoughts are important things, but they're just thoughts. And I don't mean to degrade a thought. I want to talk about the importance of thinking, because the same process that gets us into trouble with our thoughts is the same process that allows us to do great creative things. You see, thoughts are really neutral. They're neither good nor bad. They're neither positive nor negative, but they are sometimes helpful and less helpful. A mind is just creating thoughts. That's what your mind is doing. That's just what minds do. And if you've ever tried to be quiet, if you've ever tried to sit quietly just with no thoughts, you'll notice that they keep popping into your head. In fact, that's the challenge of meditation. When people are starting to meditate, one of the things that they often discover is just how noisy their mind is, just how many of those thoughts are going on, and how difficult it is to disengage from that, because that is what our minds do. And part of the benefit of meditation for many people is just recognizing this thought, that a thought is a thought, that an idea is the thought is just an idea that the mind has created. Some thoughts create great works of art, great works of inspiration. They can create great art, great architecture, great inventions, great ways of doing things, even thoughts about where you want to go and what you want to do and how you want to do it. Thoughts are what allow you to accumulate information into a way of thinking that is wisdom. So when you go to school, you're bringing thoughts into your mind and you're putting them there. But those same capacities for thinking also get us into trouble. The same process that thought about great works of art and great architecture have thought about destroying great works of art and of destroying great architecture and have thought about doing cruel things to other people and have thought of ways of kind of dominating their world. Also, thoughts have led people to depression and anxiety, that our thought process, when we buy into it, when we forget that a thought is a thought, it can begin to overtake us. And so what was a thought now becomes our reality because we act on it as if it's a reality rather than stepping back and recognizing that a thought is just a thought. So our problem number one is that we forget a thought is just a thought. We make it seem to be reality. See, the problem is not the thought. The problem is not that our mind creates thoughts. The problem is that we lose track of that and we begin to assume that that thought really is reality. Imagine a line on a paper with two points on either end, and that line represents the spectrum between believing a thought is a thought and believing that a thought is reality. So at one end, if you would imagine on the left-hand side, a thought is real. So that when a thought pops into your mind, you assume that that's really true. On the other end is thought recognition. It's a realization that a thought is just a thought. And in any moment in time, the person can step back and say, okay, that's just a thought in my mind. That's not reality. Now, there is a reality out there, but the way we're experiencing that reality is through our thoughts and through our paradigm. So imagine that spectrum and imagine that most of us live somewhere in between, somewhere in that gray area of 50%. You know, if you think really about the bell curve and put that in the middle, that represents a lot, that there are some people who are on the end that always think that a thought in their head is reality. And really that the extreme of that is one place of mental illness. It's a place where the brain is no longer able to process that something popping in, no matter how strange it is, isn't really reality. So that's one extreme end. And the other extreme end would be somebody who is constantly able to think, okay, that's just me thinking. That's not reality. That's just me thinking. And recognizing that something pops into their head, recognizing maybe that something that's bothering them is just a thought. So when they're upset about something, they can pause and go, okay, what am I thinking about? That's a thought. Okay, so problem one is that we forget a thought is a thought. And we just assume that it's reality and that gets us into trouble. Problem number two is that we focus on thoughts that lead to our emotional state. And this is always true, that our emotional state is run by what's going on in our mind. How we're thinking about things is going to establish how we're feeling about things. We often think that it's the reverse, that these feelings are there and they color our thoughts. But in reality, our thoughts are creating our emotional state. So if we were to do a little thought experiment and I asked you to pick an emotional state, whatever emotional state it might be, angry or happy or frustrated or content, you would probably then go to your bank of memories and think about something that made you feel angry or happy or frustrated or content, and you would focus on that. And pretty soon your emotional state would follow there because you're thinking about it and you're processing it. So what we're thinking about creates our emotional state. And that's the real problem here, is that when we get focused on these thoughts, they lead to our emotional state. And then we get stuck in that emotional state. And then there is a kind of a continual process where when our emotional state begins to drop low, then we begin to keep going after these thoughts, ruminate on the thoughts that are going to perpetuate our feelings rather than stepping back and going, wow, I'm just creating. I'm thinking my way into this emotional state. Now, all of these feelings that we have, the full spectrum of emotional life, if we divide it not into good emotions and bad emotions, but higher emotions and lower emotions, we can put a zero point at a place where you're just kind of neutral. You're not feeling one way or the other. You're just kind of neutral. And one way of thinking about that is that that's when you have a quiet mind. A quiet mind leads to a fairly neutral place to be. But when we are looking at those higher emotions, we can recognize that we're thinking about things that are making us feel those higher emotions. And those higher emotions, I mean happiness and contentment and joy and satisfaction. And those higher emotions are a part of where we usually want to spend more time. It's not that we want to avoid the lower emotions, but we want to recognize that a lot of times those lower emotions are simply coming because of the thoughts that we're using to create them. So when we're feeling angry or resentful or jealous or, very frustrated, those feelings come in not as bad emotions, but as lower emotions that we don't like to experience those. And when we notice that emotional place, then we can begin to reflect on our thoughts. So mistake number two is the focus of our thoughts leads to emotional states in ways that we are not always tracking and watching. Now, problem number three is that our thoughts and our beliefs are built in paradigms, that we have this way of understanding the world, a paradigm, a worldview. And that paradigm or worldview is created by what we've experienced in our life, by our gender, by our education, by lots of different elements in our past, some of which we had no control over. But our problem is we forget that we live in that paradigm. We begin to assume that we're seeing things as they are. We see them things as true, even though somebody else may see something very differently than you. And so our paradigms are not particularly reliable. In fact, if we want to pull in a couple of research terms from social research, we can talk about validity and reliability. Back in college, when I was studying sociology, we would look at experiments and we would judge whether they were valid and whether they were reliable. And those were two different measures. Validity is looking at the internal logic of an experiment. Did the experiment that somebody was doing, was it really looking at what they said they were looking at? When they were doing the research, did what they worked out as their experimental protocol, did it represent a look at what they said they were going to study? And that's validity. And then there is another piece of reliability. Could you take the information from that research and apply it to other places? A reliable piece of research can be used to extrapolate what might be happening in larger groups as you look at that piece from that smaller group. So here's the thing about paradigms. Paradigms are valid. They have internal validity in the sense that they make sense to you. They help you make sense of the world. They're shortcuts. There are ways of bringing in information and compressing it because there's so much coming at us. We have to have a paradigm. It's not as if we can just get rid of our paradigm. So what we're trying to look at is how useful that paradigm is for us to interpret the world. Paradigms are incomplete. Paradigms are inaccurate at places, and yet internally, they look like they're consistent. They look like they are logical. They look like they are complete. But if somebody else were to look through your paradigm, to look at the world through your paradigm, they would be surprised because they see it differently. It's not reliable. In other words, we don't all share a point of view. In fact, one way of thinking about this is that there's not one or just a few ways of seeing the world. There are more than that. Given the current population in the world, you could estimate that there are over 7 billion ways of seeing reality, that we all have a different way of seeing it. And the problem is that we forget that we have this paradigm. We forget that we have these masks on, these barriers of noticing all of reality. And so our paradigm begins to be what we believe to be true. And our thoughts are created in that paradigm. Thoughts are formed by the paradigm that creates our beliefs, both our fearful and our aspirational beliefs. And then all of this is filtered through another piece, and that's our mood. Are we up or are we down? Is our energy high or low? And that's what I mean by mood, is what's your energy level? When we are in a high mood, when we're rested and when we're feeling good, we're often able to say, okay, that just is a thought. But when our mood is low, when our energy is down, when we're depleted, then we begin to confuse our thoughts with reality, and that's where we really get into trouble. So we make some mistakes. Number one, we believe our thought is reality. That's one of those very clear places where if we want to thrive, we want to be more aware of the places. So mistake number one is we believe our thoughts are reality. Number two is we believe we are our thoughts. So whenever we think about ourselves, we believe that that is us rather than we are a work in process. We are a progress. And as we begin to step away from the we are our thoughts, we recognize that our thoughts are just happening in our mind, that we don't have to buy into them. When somebody is upset with who they are, they can decide to change it. And they can also recognize that they're probably not seeing a full side of that. So our thoughts begin to weave our reality of the world and of ourselves, both of which are mistakes. Number three is we try to control our thoughts. So what happens next is when people recognize that a thought is just a thought, they immediately think, well, then what I need to do is control my thoughts. And it's kind of like if I were to say, don't think about that pink elephant. Your immediate place in your mind is to picture that pink elephant. No matter what you do, you begin to fight against these thoughts. And thoughts, because of the way our mind works, are not so easily discarded. When we try to control our thoughts, when we try to weave a new reality, our mind keeps creating new thoughts. So instead of getting caught in that trap, we need to step back and go a different way. A thriving person has some skills and knows what to do with these thoughts. So what do you do? Number one, you accept the role of your mind, and that is to create thoughts. That's just what a mind does. And so when you notice these thoughts running through your head, you just recognize that's the work of your mind. There's no need to get upset about it. There's no need to try to control it. It's just what your mind does. Some of those thoughts are going to be helpful for you. Some of those thoughts are going to move you forward, and some are going to be unhelpful. And so the judgment is to say, is this thought process helping me or is it unhelpful? Not is it good or bad? It just is. That's what thoughts are. They just are. But instead of getting caught in that, think about, is this helping me or is it hindering me? Is it keeping me from growing or is it helping me to move forward in my growth? So the first thing is to accept the role of the mind, and that is that it creates thoughts. Number two is to notice we have a choice on what we do with the thoughts. We don't have a choice on whether they pop into our head. It just happens. That's what our life is about, is noticing that sometimes these very weird and sometimes very disturbing thoughts might pop into your head. That's just what a mind does. You can't do anything about whether they pop up or not, but you can decide on what you're going to do with them. Are you going to wrestle with them? Are you going to entertain them? I love that saying, entertaining your thoughts. Because what we're actually doing is we're taking those thoughts and we're playing with them. And as we play with them, sometimes we give them more and more steam and more power and let them grow. Have you ever begun to think about your day? And as you thought about your day, you began to think about all of the ways it's going to be tough today, all those challenges you've got in your path. And the longer you thought about it, the less you wanted to do anything. Well, the thoughts are there, but did you have to entertain those thoughts? Or could you set them aside and say, you know what? I'm going to do my to-do list. I'm going to put it down and I'm going to get moving. If you do that, if you decide to take those thoughts and create it into your action strategy, then you've moved forward. But if all you've done is allow your thoughts to build and build and build and have a thought attack where all of those thoughts are now overwhelming you and swirling around you and keeping you from doing anything, then you've been stuck in your thoughts. So you have a choice on whether you're going to keep pursuing all the thoughts. Not whether you have the thoughts, but whether you're going to keep pursuing those thoughts. Number three is you can realize that every thought, useful or not useful, good or bad, is still just a thought. So when you have those frustrating moments where you find yourself really thinking about very angry and hurtful things you might want to do to somebody, recognize that it's still just a thought. When you're having really good moments, even those high moments of creativity, recognize that it's still a thought. Now, when I say just a thought, I'm not saying that there is something lowly about a thought. Thoughts really are great things. We are amazing creatures because of our capacity of using those thoughts. But a thought is a thought. Until you make it in some way reality, it is a thought. So then you can do something else. You can, number four, choose whether to hold or release that thought. Think about it as a thought that passes through. And we all have those moments. You know, maybe there's a thought that comes to you and then something kind of distracts you and you lose it. Well, that was a thought. It passed. And then there are other times when you get a thought and you mull over a thought and you entertain that thought and you fixate on that thought and you ruminate on that thought, and that thought takes over. One of the things you gave up is the fact that you had a choice on whether to hold it or release it. Sometimes we find it better to release those thoughts and step away. Number five, notice your emotions indicate your thought process. Your emotions are a great barometer of how your thinking is going. A barometer will tell you whether it's high pressure or low pressure. When I go to the beach, my father has a barometer on the wall. And as I'm walking down the hall, I'll take a look at that barometer and I'll set the needle that marks the current pressure to what the other needle that is actually measuring that pressure does. So they match up. And then I can walk by at any point and notice whether that pressure is lower or higher. If the pressure is higher or the same, I know that we can head for the beach. We can enjoy the outdoors. But if the pressure drops low, then I know that we need to make some alternate plans because it's not going to be good weather. And it's the same with our emotional life. If our higher thoughts are there, we don't have to worry about it. We can go and enjoy our time. But if we find ourselves in those lower thoughts, then we want to step back and say, what's going on with my thoughts? How are my thoughts weaving this reality for myself? And can I let them go? Can I decide not to be stuck on those thoughts? So as we begin to use our emotions as a barometer of our thinking, we become more and more aware of that thought process, and we can choose whether we're going to fall into that thought process or whether we're going to move forward. Number six, refuse to entertain and hold on to those less than useful thoughts. Refuse to let that be how your life is marked. If you found in the past that you tend to get there, that you can't tend to get stuck on those thoughts, refuse to do that. So how do you do that? Well, there are a couple of things you can do. First of all, you might want to understand that our mind is something that can be trained. We've been proving that for years now, that our mind is much more plastic, much more malleable, much more changeable than we ever gave it credit. And meditation is one of the places where people have discovered that. They've learned ways of stilling their mind. So you might try to learn some meditation. But let me give you a quick technique on how to do this. The first thing you do is to step back and say, okay, what am I thinking? Let's say you're finding yourself at a lower mood. And as you're at a lower mood, you decide to ask yourself the question, what am I thinking? As soon as you do, you'll become aware of the thoughts that are going through your head that are keeping you down, those negative thoughts. And as you become aware of those negative thoughts, then you can decide that those really are just thoughts. And so the first step is to become aware of the thought. The second step is to say, that's just a thought. Sometimes just that distance is enough for that thought to release itself, for that thought to shake loose and drop away. But sometimes you might find yourself having already kind of dug the hole. You find yourself stuck. So at that point, I want you to imagine a stop sign. And imagine yelling to yourself, stop. You don't have to do it out loud, just in your head, stop. And what you're trying to do is trigger your mind that you're not going to keep going down that thought. Sometimes that will help because you've told yourself that's a thought and it becomes a little bit distant. And then you've decided to stop and it becomes further distant, and then you can let it go. Sometimes that won't happen. So you have to find a distraction. And the distraction is to break the thought habit. Years ago, we used to talk about mental hygiene, and I wish we still talked about that concept, because mental hygiene was watching what your mind is doing. How do you take care of the thoughts that are running around in your head? How do you take care of your mind so you decide what's coming into your head, what's coming into your mind, what's coming into your process, so that you're not stuck on it? We don't talk about it as much anymore, but it's a good concept to think about. How are you allowing your mind to control you rather than letting your mind be the tool of your life? You're not going to stop having thoughts. People who are thrivers don't stop having thoughts. They just recognize that every thought they have is just a thought. Those thoughts are weaving their reality, but they have a choice on how they're going to interact with them. They have a choice on whether they're going to follow down that path or whether they're going to decide to let it go. The choice is yours. Will you confuse your thoughts with reality, or will you step back and say, that's just a thought? Will you then, after you've decided it's just a thought, step away and decide not to entertain, decide not to be caught up in that thought attack, and allow the thought to pass? When you do that, you've mastered the first skill of what thriving people do differently. In our next episode, we'll continue looking at the different traits of what thriving people do differently. If this has been helpful, I would love it if you would share it. You can share it on Facebook. You can share it on Twitter. Find some way of saying to people, hey, this is important. We can all thrive more, because as we all begin to get on that thriving path, we begin to create kind of a momentum of a collective that is all about thriving more in the world. And there's nothing better than creating a thriving environment around you, within your family, within work, and allowing others to grow as you're learning how to grow. So let's join together as we walk down this path of learning what thriving people do differently, and we can all learn more on thriving. This is Lee Balcom wishing you a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.